Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akuaku. Every week, we'll delve into the delicious world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show.
Welcome to another episode of Item 13. I am thrilled to have Margaret Nyamumbo with me today to talk about all things coffee, all things Kenyan coffee specifically. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Thanks for having me.
So let's kick this off by having you tell us a little bit about yourself. So as much or as little as you want to, in terms of like where you were born, your influences growing up, and maybe just a little bit of a teaser as to how you ended up in the coffee space.
Yeah, so I grew up in Kenya on my grandfather's coffee farm. So my coffee journey started pretty early. I remember playing in the coffee fields and actually eating the coffee berries. So they're like a fruit. Yeah, literally. So you can eat them and like run around the fields.
Does that give you like super high energy eating the fruit?
I mean, when you're a child, you're already like hyper. So I'm sure it made it even more intense. So I had good memories of being in the coffee field. The only thing that I, observed at the time was that coffee was not essentially sustaining farmers. In the before the 80s, my grandparents were educated. My parents were educated on coffee. It was a lucrative crop, cash crop. And since the 80s, it became less so. And farmers have been now getting prices below cost of production. And so you could see how the decline in prices in coffee really affected the coffee community back home. So the idea was when you grew up, you ran away as far as possible from coffee. That was not a livelihood. It was not something you desired to do, something you just kind of did because it was already happening. But that was not something that was desired. And so my parents were very, very keen on me going to school, getting an education, and getting a desk job. That was the ultimate dream, which I did. So I ended up doing my college in Kenya, doing my high school in Kenya and moving over to the U.S. for college. So very, very determined, did my MBA, went to work on Wall Street, a desk job. But somehow I was drawn back into coffee. And the point at which that happened was very, very random. I really enjoyed the coffee culture in New York. I survived on coffee when I was working, but also just going to coffee shops during the weekend and visiting. So I became very, very interested in the growing movement around specialty coffee.
Right.
And because Kenya is considered the best coffee in the world, objectively, actually. I don't know if you knew that. It's objectively, and that's, it actually features the highest premium in the coffee market. So it's objectively considered the best. It's analogous to French wine. There's nothing quite like it. Yeah, there's nothing quite like it. You can't reproduce Kenyan coffee anywhere else because of the very special microclimate. They've tried.
That is so wild to me because actually, and it's fine, we can zigzag on this conversation here because one of the questions I was going to ask you was one around, Well, this I was actually going to ask you that link between, you know, working on Wall Street coffee culture, and I wondered if part of the New York coffee drinking culture brought you back home, in quotes. But then wanted to understand, like, how different, because I've had people who grow, roast, and sell Ethiopian coffee.
Yeah.
On the podcast, who also will claim that is the best, or, you know. And so wanted to understand that, like, what is the, and I think you started to touch on it, like, the microclimate. Like, what is unique about Kenyan coffee versus Ethiopian coffee, or even Ghanaian coffee that I discovered we have, like, just
there's Ghanaian coffee. So they,
we just
I
discovered we have Ghanaian coffee a couple of years ago, and that's been what I've been drinking most of the time now. I have different brands of Ghanaian coffee at home.
Oh no, I actually haven't tasted Ghanaian coffee. I would wanna taste it. So they I'll tell you the difference. So like I say, Ethiopian is my second favorite coffee. So after Kenya, Ethiopian is the second favorite. So the differences are, in Kenyan coffee, what makes it really different, and if you ask any baristas, coffee corner, so they'll tell you Kenyan coffee is one of them, you know, one of their favorites, and you can always taste it. In a blind taste, even a new person who's never tasted coffee will be able to tell the Kenyan coffee from all the others, because it's such a, it has a very distinctive taste, right? You can't sell fake Kenyan coffee because people will know that it's not. And then the part of that is the microclimate. So we're like located right on the equator. And then we have the Indian Ocean right there. And then we have Mount Kenya. So you have, you know, the altitude. So the coffee is growing at very high altitude next to Mount Kenya and Mount Kilimanjaro, which is right next to the south. And then you have an ocean there, and then you have the Rift Valley, which you may be familiar with. It runs actually from Ethiopia, which is an active volcano, almost. It's actively separating, so the soil there is very, very rich, right? So, and so those are the three main areas, and then the other X factor is the varieties that we grow. So a lot of people know Arabica and Robusta,
right,
as like the varieties, but within Arabica there's like different varieties. Think of like wine and how there's different varietals. Coffee has that as well. So in Kenya, we have something called the SL28. And this variety was developed in the 1930s, specifically for the Kenyan soil, to make sure that it doesn't get diseases. So it's disease resistant and also grows perfectly. So you have this, you know, variety that was specifically developed for that soil, but it also happens to be one of the most tasty varieties as well. They've tried growing that variety like in Brazil, Colombia. It just doesn't taste the same. It has to be in that particular soil. And then in terms of what's the difference between Ethiopia and Kenya, the difference there is, so think of Ethiopia as having a lot of, like, because it's the birthplace of coffee, it has a lot of varieties, a lot of like a lot of varieties that haven't been produced. So when you think about the rest of the world, they're going off of like offshoots. So there's like one variety that went around the world, and that's what everyone plants. But in Ethiopia, because that's where the coffee naturally grows, so everything there is like natural. It's indigenous varieties.
Interesting.
They're not like hybrids that have been, created, right? So those indigenous varieties are very, very tasty. And the other thing they do is the processing. So Kenya and Ethiopia process coffee very differently. So in Kenya, we process it using a method called washed.
Okay.
In Ethiopia, they process using a method called natural processing. And the difference there is actually, at which point do you remove the seed from the berry? Remember I told you like it's like a seed,
it's a berry,
instead of a berry. So in natural process, you actually put the seed out in the sun for about 30 days. And so all the sweetness from the fruit goes into the seed. So it makes the coffee like very sweet and like aromatic. So it's very, strawberries, blueberries. Yeah. So Ethiopian coffees have a very like fruity flavor. And in Kenya, we use a method called washed, where as soon as we harvest it, we remove the seed. So we don't get that kind of effect of fermentation going into the seed. Yeah. So it's a very, very like clean tasting The only fermentation we do is we ferment that seed overnight for 2 days. It's called double fermentation. That's another very specific processing method that's in Kenya, not anywhere else. So we ferment it for 12 hours. Then we drain the water and ferment it again. So it's called double fermentation. So you get a very, it's like rinsing out and then putting in clean water. So you get a very, very clean and pure taste. And that's something other countries don't really know how to do yet. So that's the reason that Kenyan coffee on the world map is features some of the highest prices, but also is world renowned as a producer of unique coffees around the world.
Wow, that's so interesting to me, and I wonder if you know all of this by one virtue of having grown up on a coffee farm and just being around it, or. Mm-hmm. When you started your coffee business brand, that you immersed yourself more in that world in terms of educating yourself to understand better, like the processing, and actually that's probably my next question in terms of so when you decide, so you're in New York, and I can relate to this. So I can picture you in New York on Wall Street, down in Tribeca somewhere. going to your coffee shops, blah blah blah, and then it hits you based on all of that experience. You know, like what your the connection between what you could potentially do. And what is the sort of what was that aha moment like? And then how do you go from that, I should start a coffee brand, or I should, start a coffee business? Like there is that people in New York or in the US or whatever don't have a sense of like what really good coffee is, right? So how do you go from that aha moment to building like your brand in terms of how do you think about sourcing and roasting and the marketing pieces of it and how that all comes together?
So I'm in New York and I'm thinking, so I used to cover when I was in investment banking, I used to cover retail and CPG companies. So I saw brands at that scale and I was kind of invested in brand stories and how they grow. So you're looking at big brands and looking at how they started, and you're like, oh, wow, they actually started with this idea and then they grew and now they are, on the stock exchange, or they are, large private companies. And so that got really me interested in sort of beginnings and how do you start a food movement, right, from the ground up and build it into something that people drink every day. And how do you use that to influence culture? Because our culture is very influenced by what we eat. And for me, when I looked at the coffee industry, what surprised me was that I couldn't find Kenyan coffee. Kenyan coffee is not easy to find in the U.S. You can't just go into a shop and ask for it. There wasn't a much of it. So I was like, oh, I remember back home, the farmers said they struggled to find a market. The prices were low. So there was a disconnect between the demand, where here, there was demand for high quality specialty coffees. And back home, the farmers were struggling to find a good market for their coffee. And I felt that I understood the coffee value chain quite well. And that was as an extension of growing up there. But also before business school, I worked at the World Bank.
Okay.
So when I worked at the World Bank, my role was essentially looking at how we can add value to African exports. And so I became quite familiar.
Oh, I see the dots connecting now. Okay.
I became quite familiar with essentially what was happening, where we were losing, because we export a lot of raw materials, where we were losing some of that value and where it could be added. So when I went to business school, I was thinking I wanted to make a difference, and I wanted to do something to really help people. But I felt like, the charity model hadn't really worked. Mm-hmm. We needed something that was embedded in a sustainable business model. And I felt like, given like what I knew and my skill set, that's something I could bring to the coffee industry to really start to make a mark first on essentially people understanding that coffee is African. So originally from Africa, originally from Ethiopia. And another thing that people don't know, people always say Ethiopia is the birthplace for coffee, but they mean Arabica. Because coffee actually grows naturally. Coffee grows naturally all over Africa, and especially in West Africa.
It's just the variety. That was news to me. Like I told you, I only found out 2 years ago that we have coffee in Ghana, and that was like mind blowing to me. So
I know it surprises people a lot, and I'm actually going to geek a little bit here, which you might find interesting as a West African, because people don't think of coffee as West Africa. So Ethiopia is the birthplace of coffee, but it's actually birthplace of Arabica coffee. That's the variety that was taken around the world and that's planted around the world. But remember, there's other varieties. They've just not been commercialized. And so in other parts of Africa, coffee grows naturally. It's just not the variety that that's commercialized, right? And the good thing about that is, so recently, because of climate change, Arabica may not be with us for long because it can grow in hotter climate. So in coffee research, they're trying to find an alternative. And they actually found an alternative in West Africa. It's a variety that's been growing there in the bush, but they've now discovered it as an alternative to replace Arabica.
That is wild.
Yeah, so wild. To give you an idea.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So West Africa in the next century might be where it's at.
Yeah, and I'm here for it. Hopefully by that time they figure it, although I don't know if I want to live for another couple of hundred years, but...
By then, I think we should play a bigger role.
Yeah.
I'm sure, I think a lot is happening in chocolate. So chocolate is a very good approximation for the coffee industry. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the developments in Ghana about...
Yeah.
Starting to own more of the value chain.
Exactly, yeah.
And the reason that I'm excited about building Kahawa 1893, and Kahawa means coffee in Swahili, which is what we speak in Kenya. The reason I'm excited, and the reason I named the company Kahawa, was I wanted people to know that Kahawa means coffee. The same way that we know chai means tea.
Yeah.
I wanted people to really get familiar with, the origins of coffee. And so hopefully, and then to build a global African brand, because it's obviously unbelievable that we don't have a global African brand.
Yeah, that's, again.
When coffee is originally from Africa. It's like if there wasn't an Italian pasta brand.
Right? Right. It's so wild to me. One, you make so many good points. One, actually, even before I go there, so your full brand, because I didn't mention it at the top of the interview, your full brand is Kahawa 1893. So Kahawa 1893.
Yes.
Oh, that's even older. So then what does 1893 stand for? Does it signify? Because I thought
that's when coffee was brought back to Africa. So remember, coffee went around the world. So it went from Ethiopia to the Middle East, Europe, and then Europe brought it to Latin America. And then 1893 was brought back to East Africa to be commercially grown there. Okay. So that's where 1893 comes from.
Interesting. Oh, wow. So many tidbits I'm learning today.
Thank God it's recorded.
Yeah. Great. And so you started to touch on this idea of creating a global African brand, which I think is so important. Like, to have that big vision is so key, because, and I've shared this on the podcast before, and I think it might actually have been in the conversation with Amani, for those who've been listening since day one, with Amani, who also is building an Ethiopian coffee brand, where I just remember having an argument at a dinner party with someone about just even the idea that coffee originates from Africa. I couldn't even believe that it was... like a point of contention. Yeah. She was like, no, I go to Starbucks and on the Starbucks wall, it's like Brazil or some random South American country. I'm like, okay, I can tell you for sure. You can look this up. Like, do your Googles, people.
Yeah.
It was just wild to me. So this idea, tell me more about this idea of creating a global African brand. What does that mean to you specifically? And what would that mean for not just your business, but the industry, let's just say, specifically back at home in Kenya?
Yeah, so for me, when I looked at the industry and how it could make a difference, I saw, again, going back to my work at the World Bank, I realized that a lot of the value that happens in coffee, so coffee is a $100 billion industry. But do you know how much of that value farmers get?
I'm afraid to even ask.
Less than 1%.
No.
So farmers capture less than 1% of it, of $100 billion. And remember, the industry is nothing without farmers. And within the farming, industry, especially in Africa, guess where the labor comes from? 90% of the labor is coming from women.
Yeah, that is not surprising to me.
So for me, when I thought about women empowerment, mm-hmm. Think about how can we, empower women. Part of it is how do we think of, something like coffee, making sure you're bringing that value back to the people that make it possible. And so my first point was, when we created the brand, we started off with a fund, like a women's fund, where mm-hmm. we give a portion of our profits to go back to the farmers, to the women farmers. And you might be familiar with this, land issues. So in Kenya, they say 90% of the labor comes from the women, but they don't own the land. The men own the land. So when the women do all the work on the farm, they do all the processing labor, mm-hmm. the men take it from then, like export it. And then when the money comes, all that money goes to the men. And the women are left sort of kind of not really in a position to take, just to, to celebrate all the hard work that they've put in. But still, as you know, in African households, women are still the ones that have to feed the household.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, right? So I was trying to think, this is personal experience, personal observation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to look at what exactly has worked. I don't know, did you grow up in Ghana at all?
Or? Yes, yeah, I grew up in Ghana. So I moved here for college at 18 or 19.
Okay, cool. So similar. So and what I observed had made a difference was this thing called table banking. It's where women form groups of like 30 to 50. And the reason it's called table banking is you sit around a table, sometimes it's called merry-go-round, and then because the women are unbanked, they don't have a bank, they don't have any assets, right? So they can't get any loan, right, for their business or anything.
Yeah.
So they actually bank themselves. So they get into groups of 30 and everyone, like, gives a certain amount, $10 or a dollar, and it becomes, like, $100. And now they give $100 to one person, and that person uses that money as a loan to use for their business or to develop their farm, and then they repay back. And then they give to the next person. So that goes around. So my first point of impact was, what about if we add it to that pot? So we're not introducing any new complex program that needs program management and,
right.
all that. Yeah. We're saying, look, you guys already have this pot. It has $100. What if we put in another $100?
Interesting.
So that way, like, you can give two women. What if we put another $100? You can give three women. So that's really how we started. And then I thought about, the problem with the coffee value chain is not even specifically to with what's happening within a company. A lot of it is like we're not paying enough money for coffee. We're underpaying, right?
Yeah.
So consumers are willing to pay. The market just hasn't given them a mechanism, right? So how about we give customers an opportunity to, make that difference, right? And give directly to that pot. So we came up with a tipping mechanism. So in the back of our bags, there's a QR code, you tip it, you scan it, and you can give directly to that pot. And then you can actually, we even have like a way for you to do Bitcoin if you want it, or crypto.
Oh, and then, look at you being fancy.
I know, it's pretty cool. And then the reason that crypto was interesting is because of the application for, tipping small amounts. And we had a vision of bringing that to the coffee shop. So when you tip your barista, what if you tip like a dollar for every dollar, 20 cents goes to the farmer, right? So that's the vision, future vision. So we now have this pot of money and we double it. If you give $5, we double it, becomes $10 and we give back to the women. And it's so wonderful the impact that we've seen there, that the women have, especially during this pandemic, but also like they're now having projects. So they've built new, new businesses that they can support themselves. They're actually empowering themselves, and having this part of money is like helping them invest in their future. So very, very bullish on on that model of like, how can we use coffee and be able to get the value of it and bring that value back to producers? That's one. And the second part to your question around why is it important that we become a global African brand? As you know, part of development is narrative. And the narrative around Africa sometimes isn't the most positive or isn't the most up to date. And so for us to be able to present this crop that everyone's reliant on, coffee, and present that as, you know, something that Africa is at the top of, I find that really, really interesting to be able to feature in conversations or have people start their day with this view that, oh, wow, this coffee is coming from Africa, and to really change the narrative around kind of how we think about Africa, even in a small way.
Yeah, I agree. And I like to actually to your point about even in a small way is so important, right? I think.
Yeah.
We were talking offline, you know, before we came on about, you know, how I even started this podcast. And for me, it was more just the day-to-day conversations I was having in the banking space in particular with co-workers or clients who, you know, I worked at a global bank, and you'd think that
they would know.
Right. And so when you think about that population, then you extrapolate that to like the rest of the population in terms of like what they know about Africa or African food.
Yeah.
And so then I started doing, you know, in my own little way, you know, trying to tell the stories of African food entrepreneurs. The podcast was born and so on and so forth. And so I think if all of us in the ecosystem do what we call in our own little way, there's that.
It's called soft power. It's a form of soft power. It's like we don't have the military, but we can kind of use soft power to influence perceptions. So that's, isn't it? And coffee, I think, is a very powerful one because it touches almost everyone.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a very powerful
I agree.
Medium.
Okay, so we're going to, I think this is a good time to take a break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about your product line, the different kinds of coffee blends you have. I think we'll do a little bit of coffee education.
Okay.
Would you start it a little bit, you know, telling us about the unwashed versus naturally, no, that's the same. You tell us all about
naturally
that.
Processed.
I feel like I'm mixing
washed
that up.
Washed versus naturally processed,
We'll talk a little bit about that. And then we'll also touch on the big news, the headline that drew my attention to you.
Yes.
And then we'll talk a little bit about, we started talking about that, about your big vision for, you know, the Hawa 1893 in terms of like what you see for the brand this year and going forward. And then we'll wrap up as usual with our rapid fire segment. So we'll take a quick break and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago. Before Wisconsin was recognized as a state, immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheese making craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
So we're back. We're going to dive into some coffee education. But actually, before we do that, let's wrap up what we're talking about in terms of your brand. So actually, and that might lead us into the coffee education piece. I want to talk about your product line. So let people know, like, what do you sell on your website? Kahawa 1893, what coffee blends do you sell? And I also know you do coffee subscriptions, so.
Yeah.
Tell the people.
And we just got listed on by Bon Appetit as one of the best coffee subscriptions in the country.
Yay, look at you.
Yeah, so it's a good option.
So the way
that I think about our products as well is we have single origins and then we have blends. And so for single origins, if that's something that you're new to, it basically means that the coffee comes from a single place. So let's say it comes from Kenya, it comes from a very specific farm or cooperative. Blends are when we take coffee and we mix it together. So we take coffee from Kenya and coffee from Colombia. Because they have different flavor profiles, we mix them together to produce something that's even better. So that's what board blends are. And in terms of our product line, we've essentially made it very easy for people to enjoy coffee depending on how they like it. So we have the single origins, which are very distinct flavors. So if you want to try Kenyan, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Malawi, so we have coffee from different parts of Africa, and they all have very distinct tastes depending on how they process them, depending on the microclimate. So we have different options. So if you like very fruity, fruity coffee, naturally processed, we have some from Ethiopia. If you like your coffee, more blackcurrant flavors, that's Kenya. If you like something even smoother, we have something from Rwanda. And then the next thing we do is we have blends. So we have like espresso, we have decaf. And then in terms of strength, so espresso and decaf are just roast types. They're roasted to be used for a specific purpose. So espresso is regular coffee beans, but then we roast it so that it can be brewed under pressure. Because when you brew coffee with an espresso machine, it's under pressure. So if there's any defects or anything that's kind of pronounced, it's going to come out. And that's usually a problem. So when you're roasting espresso, you have to roast it a certain way. And then we have light roast and then medium roast and dark roast.
Yeah, tell us and the what difference all between that means.
So the roast level, any coffee can be roasted to any roast level. But the secret is people used to think that like the really dark roast, the ones that are almost burnt, you use all your like lower quality beans because no one's going to tell the difference because they're burnt. So what happens in specialty coffee is you find a lot of the coffees are like roasted light roast and medium roast. So if a coffee is light roast, it has to be such high quality for it to be roasted at light. So because you'll be able to tell if there's any defects, right? And then on the medium roast, I personally love medium roasts because they give you the, like, you get the origin taste. So you're able to be like, when I taste a coffee, you can be like, this is a Kenyan. But then it still has a roasting flavor. So the more you roast, so light roast is like you roast it for a very short time. Think of like steak. So you have the rare steak and the well done, right?
That's a good analogy. Yeah.
It's a good analogy. So light roast is like rare. And then medium is like medium, well done. And then well done. That's really it. So depending on how much you roast it, and they all have different flavors. So medium has a bit of the original coffee flavor and a little bit of the roasting. Light roast has a lot more of like the, it's almost like you're drinking, you like really taste the farm. You'll taste like all the, the coffee types. Then dark roast, it's just, it's
so
the roast.
Are you telling us to stay away from dark roast?
No, dark roast is one of our favorite. I was going to say dark roast is one of our favorite. It's actually one of our best sellers.
Okay.
And the reason that our dark roast is very popular is we don't burn it.
Okay,
so we roast it to a level where you get all that, like, you get the coffee taste, like, when you are like, I'm drinking coffee, but we don't burn it. So it's not bitter at all. You can drink our dark roast without milk, which is rare because usually dark roast, you have to put a lot of milk to like get rid of the bitterness.
Wow.
But dark roast is like,
I have a whole like thing of coffee, so I'm gonna try. I'm definitely gonna try your coffee. I'll let you know how
different
I feel
levels
about that dark roast.
We should probably have like a flight of different levels. So our dark roast is one of the most popular. So let's say when you think about like Starbucks is very dark, Pete's is very dark. So we are, and that's usually what most people are used to, that level of darkness. But we've taken that. And we've roasted it in a way that it's not bitter. So you feel like you're drinking a really high quality. So we use the same beans, high quality beans for light roast and dark roast. So it's really a preference of taste. So if you like your coffee like very bold and smoky, than dark roast. If you like your coffee like more delicate tea-like, then you do light roast.
Actually, speaking of tea-like, I saw on your website when I was looking that you have
tea bags.
What looks like coffee tea bags. Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know how to say it, like coffee tea bags.
Yes, so that's a
wild
product, but I was, when I, I'll tell you the why behind that product. So when I started in coffee, specialty coffee, even I was kind of new to it, you know, cause I wasn't that deep into, well, the specialty coffee culture was very, secluded. There was a bit of snobbishness to it. Like you had to know certain terms, you have to know the vocabulary, you have to know this little intricacies to be welcomed into it. Right. And still a lot of people are like kind of, it's distant. It's like you have to know to really enjoy it.
Even that, you know, there's so many spoofs, like even the way you order at Starbucks, like there's so many spoofs about that and how exclusionary that can feel also.
Yes. So the funny thing happened is when I started it, and that was the thing where people were like, you know, black people don't sell coffee. Like, how are you going to be successful? Like, yeah, coffee is like for like white people to sell. So that was another thing that I thought was interesting. So I was very keen on making coffee inclusive. So I remember gifting my friend a bag of coffee when I started. And then I went to visit her like a few weeks later. She hadn't brewed it. I was like, why have you not enjoying the coffee? She's like, I don't know how to do it. And then she had put it, and then I was like, oh, let's make coffee. Let's make it now. And then she took the coffee beans, and put them into a pour over. I don't know if you know a pour over. Corn.
Oh, like the, so actually, this is coffee beans, not ground.
Yeah, before grinding them. And she was about to pour water on them. And I told her, like, you know you have to grind. She's like, I don't know. I don't know these things. She did not actually know that. And so that really, to me, I realized, like for me to be able to introduce people to, even tell them that Kenyan coffee is good, I have to basically introduce them to specialty coffee to begin with. And so I was trying to find a way to do that in a single serve format. And so the single serves is actually coffee that's, you know, our coffee, we take it, it's ground, it's ready to go. All you got to do is add water. And you get such a great taste.
Like, that is so genius.
Genius. And you like, get a high quality cup. It's almost like sometimes like better than you would get you know, at a coffee shop, because like you already know the quality of it. So yeah, so that's how. And then like also, you know, some farmers have never tasted their coffee, so I brought it back to the farmers. And now every time I go back, they're like, bring us that coffee you brought us.
That is, you know, and that's one of those interesting things where, like a couple of episodes ago, I spoke to the Canadian African, and we were talking about Ghanaian chocolate. We're talking about the cocoa value chain. Mm-hmm. And how, like, a farmer breaks his back for years and years and years and has never tasted chocolate before. Not that he needs chocolate, you know, to survive, but it's like there's no, like,
they don't produce it there.
It goes out and that's it.
It's the same thing. In Kenya, the coffee culture wasn't there. We drank tea. We grew up on tea. That's another thing we didn't even talk about. Culturally, we drink tea. So coffee was just for export. So for a long time, it was even illegal. So like the British made it illegal to like roast coffee locally or drink it. Yeah. So for a long time, up until the 80s is when, like, they, you know, after we got independence, they changed the constitution.
These colonization things again with, like, all of the, I mean,
we need hours.
We don't have, like, hours, right? It's just
so
wild.
That's why the coffee culture, so people always ask me, you know, what's the coffee culture in Kenya? And I'm like, we're developing it now. You know, there's coffee shops that are starting to show up. People are really getting into it. But my generation, we grew up on tea.
Interesting. I want to talk about your packaging, but I'll come back to that. I want to wrap up this because we're talking about roasting.
Yeah.
Just so it's clear for people in terms of, like, how you source, how you roast. Because you talk about, like, we roast. So do you have a roastery? Like, how...
Yeah,
I'm sure, because you're based in, so for people that don't know, you're based in San Francisco, you're based in the U.S., in California.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. So sourcing, roasting, and then how it eventually gets to market.
Yeah, so the coffee is, you know, grown in Africa, processed, harvested there. It's almost done, really. You know, 90% of it is done in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it arrives here, because it's a fresh product, as soon as you roast it, it starts to age. So that's why we don't roast currently in Africa, because it will take too long. By the time it gets here, it's old. So we have to roast here. So we roast, like, everything freshly roasted. And, yeah. And then we distribute, you know, we are in Trader Joe's, we'll soon be in Target and Fresh Market.
Yeah.
But we also are online. So for online customers, we roast and ship immediately from our facilities here.
Okay, so do you own your roasting facilities? Because when I've had people...
No,
we
rent.
Okay. No. It's beginnings, right? You do what you need to do.
Oh, yeah,
I just wanted
yeah, of
to be
course
clear
it's,
on that.
It wouldn't be wise for us at this point to take on that much capital investment.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Also, you know, coffee is a very advanced industry, obviously. So there's a lot of services to support it.
Right.
So
yeah,
really, that's why it's one of the easier businesses to start.
Yeah. Since you brought it up,
yeah,
let's talk about Trader Joe's. I have you just sort of slipped it in there, and I need to like say it clearly for everyone that's listening.
Yes.
That Margaret and Kawana 1893. I keep saying 1893. This is the first Black and woman-owned coffee brand to launch in Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
That is a major achievement. I think that needs a pause and a clap and a snap of fingers. All of that good stuff. Yeah. She's just like, oh, and we're in Trader. Like, that's a big deal. Congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, it's been a while now. I feel like the honeymoon is, the first month, it was so exciting. Every time I went shopping to Trader Joe's. So, like, Trader Joe's is, like, my local grocery. So, I'm, like, there, you know, all the time.
That's,
I remember the first week was very exciting, but now I just go and buy my groceries and like, and sometimes I don't even like make it to the coffee section.
That's a wonderful achievement, and I think it's, you know, you're doing the things you need to do to meet like your objective, right, of becoming a global brand. I don't think we have time, and you know what, I've been telling people now, like, we're getting to the point where like I need to have a live show, because like an hour is not enough for everybody I speak to delve into all the details I want, because I want to delve into the details of it and how all of that happened, but we don't have the time to do that. But I just wanted to congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
And then two, I just wanted to get your perspective on what you think it means for others in the retail space. And then maybe you can also talk about packaging, because I was going to ask about that, because your packaging is outstanding. So I can't imagine like it's standing out even at Trader Joe's, right? So
yeah.
If you can tell us, there's a whole bunch of things wrapped up into this.
What do you think it means?
And then like the packaging piece.
Yeah, and we have, so I'll tackle, so the Trader Joe's was, you know, I shop there all the time, and, you know, this was the first time they're bringing in a branded product in coffee. Usually they only sell private label, they only sell their coffee, so that was not even a place I was thinking that we would launch,
because
they don't sell other brands there for coffee, so it was, you know, for me to go to a place where I shop every day and to see the brand there. It's very, very exciting, but also distribution. So being able to remember when I said the women needed a market.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, being able to bring coffee to, you know, as many people as possible and introduce them to the brand, it really makes the impact even larger. So it's actually the since we got in Trader Joe's, the tips that we've gotten from there are what's enabled the women to now invest in a project, the project I was talking about. They're actually investing in a maize mill where they process maize. So right now they have to walk many hours to the nearest maize mill. And so they're like, then they requested this. So like, I asked them, what do you guys want to do with
what
the money?
They need?
And they were like, we have an idea. we are going to have a maize mill so that we can, you know, not have to work too long, serve the community, have jobs for the women here, and like invest in the future. So that was, you know, going through the Joes and getting those tips enabled that project. And then now we're going to launch more stores, really bring that coffee to more people. It gives us an opportunity again to increase the impact that we have on the ground. So very, very excited about that. On the packaging, we actually have the more bags. I don't know if you've seen them for probably on Instagram. I put them on Instagram, but they're also on our website. So those are the ones we're going to launch in retail when we do other stores. And so I think for us, the story there is we want it to, you know, just share the colorful. A lot of it is like colorful African.
I'm looking at the new
packaging. Bags at the bottom of the website. You like that? So because of the, we're going to have more varieties out there. As you can see with the Kenyan, the Ethiopian, the Serengeti, we won't be able to differentiate them on the shelf.
That's right.
So the goal there was to have something that celebrated the vibrancy of our colors, right? Mm-hmm. And also to celebrate for us in Kenya, the safari. That's like something that we're big on. The landscape.
That is so cool.
That's really what that is. It's like celebrating the beautiful landscape, the beautiful colors and patterns. And I think for me in the future, what I want to do is like, I want to celebrate African artists. So in the future, I want to have like African artists on the bag, African art on the bag as well.
I could see that being so cool, right? And you could have like QR codes where people could scan and like buy the art. Like it could be.
I know. Cool. I didn't even think of that. You just came up with that idea and now you are...
I was just like, that's all. You know, you're doing blockchain, I'm doing QR codes. We're just like...
Yeah, because then you're right. That's actually a good way to bring art. Because I've been thinking of like, again, back to this narrative, this big picture of bringing African culture to the global, global, you know, marketplace. And then celebrating what really makes it so diverse. So I like that. I was actually looking at some African artists. So if you have any ideas of artists you love, let me know.
Yeah, I can. And then also offline, we can talk about sourcing kahawa for somehow getting it into Ghana, but that's like a whole other conversation.
Yeah, people have been asking about Kenya. People have been like, I'm going to Kenya, where can I buy it? And can you imagine, we're not in Kenya yet, but next year.
Next year. This is all part of your big
I want to put it. I think a good place for us is probably putting it in like at least the airports, and local as well.
So you literally reading my mind, because that was my next question for you in terms of like what's next for you this year and beyond. You also just slipped in Target like quietly, but I want you to shout it loud. Target is also on the
we'll be in your list soon. In the pipeline. So Target is also, you know, another iconic brand that, as you know, has its really, really amazing lineup of products. So we're really happy to be part of that at Target family as well. Soon. And then Fresh Market, which is a grocery store that's across the country as well. So looking forward to bringing kahawa there as well.
Great. And then before we transition to rapid fire, can you let people know like where they can find you online, where they can find you on social media?
On Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at kahawa1893.com. Kahawa, that's Kahawa 1893. If you Google kahawa or 1893 coffee, it's going to come up.
Yeah, and I will share the links also. Yeah, I will share the links also for everyone. Yeah. Okay, so let's dive into the rapid fire questions really quick. It's funny that this came up in our conversation, but I'm going to ask you. Coffee or tea, if you had to pick one?
Coffee, obviously, but before Before kahawa, I would have said tea. But now that I've actually, yeah. I have a coffee brand that I roast coffee to level that I like. Yeah. Now I'm actually a coffee drinker, which is funny because even in college, I was drinking tea because I thought the coffee was like bitter. So, coffee any day. Coffee is a lifestyle. It's not a drink.
If you had to pick between more money or more free time, what would you pick?
What was the first more what?
More money or more free time?
Free time. Although, I mean, what do you do with it? I feel like you need a good mix. You need enough to be able to use your time in a pleasurable way. But I think beyond a certain threshold of like having the basics, rent covered, time to enjoy life is better for me.
Yeah, it's better. I agree.
Yeah.
And then lastly, if you could live on one dish for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh my God, this is a tough one. I was going to say, I think I actually love plantains. Feel like that's one thing I can make in different formats. You can fry it. You can in Kenya we make a stew. We like to make it as a stew. You can make chips out of it. You can make dessert out of it.
I'm sure you follow her, but Kiliwili out in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Kiliwili NYC is her handle, I think. She does all things plantain.
Oh, cool. Well, check it out.
I feel like everybody I talked to is also a previous. She also used to work at Goldman.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Look at you creating this whole ex-finance food people. Right? I love it. I feel like we need our own WhatsApp.
Right? You know what? That's a good idea.
We need our own WhatsApp so we can chat.
Talk about our war stories.
And the fun fact is my village where I grew up, we're actually known for plantains in Kenya. Like that's where our reputation is when we grow like very interesting varieties. So like the bananas here, these are not bananas. The plantain varieties that we grow there, you can become nerdy about plantain varieties the way you're nerdy about coffee.
Interesting. Oh, cool. I learned so much from you today. And I didn't even expect to. No, this was great. Thank you so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you. I learned a lot of new things today that I'm going to take away with me.
I'm glad. I'm glad we could. Yeah, I was like, I don't know what I have to say. I have like, I hope, because I've told this story so many times that I'm like, okay. Right. I hope there's new information, but like once we start talking, I'm just like very passionate about random stuff.
And I think it came through. I'm so excited for you. Like I'm excited for where you've been so far and where you're going to go. And I think you're going to add to this story of what African foods will do in terms of. I feel like changing the world sounds like superfluous and facetious in some ways, but I think so.
It does. I mean, coffee already changed, though. I don't know if you know that coffee changed the trajectory of history, right?
Wait, in what way?
In the French Revolution was powered by coffee. The Arab Revolution before that was powered by coffee. Colonization was powered by coffee. Yeah, coffee is actually a key part of how the world works.
Yeah. Yes. Well, look at you then, also adding to history in your own way.
Yeah, so coffee is a big part of where coffee goes. It's like where the world goes. So it's a literal addition to making the world different.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much, Margaret.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.